Parliament resumes next Tuesday and the government will no doubt be hoping to forget this week's international snafu, as one former foreign minister put it. So if business is to return as usual, what's on the agenda for the first sitting week of the year? Senator Scott Ryan is the Special Minister of State and the Minister assisting the Prime Minister for Cabinet. Welcome.
Good evening, Patricia. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with foreign affairs. It's the biggest story in the world and certainly in our country. The Trump phone call and the refugee deal have been dominating headlines. The president has labelled one of our government's policies as dumb. His senior staff can't even get our prime minister's name right. You must be feeling like the relationship isn't in the kind of shape you'd want it to be.
Well, it wouldn't surprise you, Patricia, that I don't enjoy it when people from other countries comment on my domestic politics. I'm not going to comment on American domestic politics. The US relationship is so wide-ranging and so deep. It runs across business, academia, government. And I think that it will remain as strong as it always has.
There are reports that a staffer from the Prime Minister's office has been suspended after posting a picture of themselves on Facebook wearing a T-shirt with the slogan, "Tuck Frump." I've got to say that very slowly so I don't say that wrong. Exactly why have they been suspended?
Look, I'm aware of the story. I wasn't aware of the T-shirt that there's a staff member that's been suspended with a post on social media. Look, I don't want to comment on the specific details because I actually don't know. What I will say more generically, though, is that, look, when people work in politics, you know, it's a sensitive work environment. And it's a sensitive work environment partly because your professional colleagues draw attention to what people post on social media. So without it making an observation on that, other than the facts that, as you outlined them, it's just something that all staff need to keep in mind.
Okay, but suspending a staff member for doing this, is this not what you need to be in newspapers, online, during this difficult time for the US relationship? That, well, someone in the Prime Minister's office wants to get an anti-Trump T-shirt?
Well, I think, first of all, it's a junior administrative position. It's not a senior position, a policy position, or a position, for example, that deals with the media. And I don't think it's fair to characterise the way you did about the US relationship either.
Well, someone works in the Prime Minister's office.
I think the US relationship with Australia, we have seen, even with the coverage of Australia in the US media over the last few days, is deep, wide-ranging, long-standing, and of such breadth and such importance to both countries. I don't think there's any reflection upon that whatsoever.
Do you wish that President Trump didn't tweet so much?
I tell you, Patricia, the one thing I'm not going to make observations on in this environment or any other is the domestic politics of another country. I mean, we don't enjoy it as Australians.
It's not helpful, though, is it? Bill Shorten says it's not helpful to have this kind of diplomacy via Twitter. You've got to concede
it's not
helpful.
I think the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, has shown the most mature approach, which is put Australian interests first and not provide a running commentary on the domestic politics of another country. I mean, we don't enjoy it when other countries provide observations on our domestic policies. I don't think any Australian enjoys it.
Sure,
why on earth would
Australians,
I do it as a minister about another country?
But most Australians would very much agree that it's very unhelpful to run a country, run foreign policy like this on Twitter. So they would expect that you'd probably reflect that.
I disagree. I think most Australians don't want the Prime Minister or his ministers to be providing a running commentary on the actions of another government about how they run their own country.
I want to get to what's happening next week. It's first week back for the year in Parliament. You're a senator. What can you tell me about what will be a priority in terms of the legislative agenda? Will the business tax cuts be high up?
Well, look, the determination about the legislative agenda is usually made at the beginning of a week. We have that. The Prime Minister also made clear in his press club address earlier this week that we are very keen to move on the changes to childcare and family tax benefits to support people, and particularly women, being able to afford to go back to work and childcare. We have a number of priorities in my area, such as with relation to politicians' work expenses that attracted some negative comment over the summer break. So I think it'll be a very busy first week. But in terms of what is brought forward first in the Senate, that decision's usually made when Parliament starts on Tuesday, closer to then.
Nick Xenophon spoke to Fran Kelly a couple of days ago and said he wasn't convinced of the full business tax cuts. Does that mean you'll split the bill so that you can get the first tranche through?
Let's wait and see.
But that would be something that would make sense. Look, I mean, that's how you negotiate, isn't it?
Well, I don't want to publicly negotiate. We, as the Prime Minister's made clear, you know, we are about getting results. And just in the second half of last year, we got more legislation through the Senate than in the previous 3 years. So I think the Senate has proven itself to be workable along with the approach of the government in negotiating. But one of the things we've done is to not negotiate publicly and to do it privately. We believe the whole enterprise tax plan needs to get through to make Australia more competitive and, in fact, keep our competitive position. But we also accept the reality of the Senate, and you need to pass. If you need to negotiate, you undertake that.
Okay. Let's get to your specific portfolio issues. The government is going to set up an independent parliamentary expenses authority. The Prime Minister says expenses will be reported monthly and will be more transparent. What will we as taxpayers be able to see and where?
Okay. So you can currently see pretty much almost every transaction I, for example, as a member of parliament, a Victorian senator, undertake, where I fly, the dates that I fly, when I use cars, etc., how much it costs my office to run in sense of phone bills and car bills and office utilities. Currently, it's in a PDF format, to use IT jargon, and it's not easily searchable, and that reflects that a lot of the IT that's used to put this together is a decade old. To move to a more monthly reporting that would be in a more easily searchable, observable format requires a back-end upgrade, which will take some time, but the Prime Minister's made clear that's a priority. I will say, however, though, that compared to other countries, and particularly compared to our state parliaments, we disclose what federal members of parliament spend money on and how they go about it to quite an extraordinary degree. I think that's a good thing. We're going to take it further and make it monthly, not just twice a year.
If you're just tuning in, the Special Minister of State, Scott Ryan, is my guest. 0418 226 576 is the number that you can text on. You can also tweet us using the hashtag RNDrive. What will the consequences for politicians be who get it wrong, who are not adhering to the rules, who are, as we've seen, Susan Lee recently and Bronwyn Bishop, who are just exploiting the rules in the most blatant, unsatisfactory way to taxpayers?
Well, without agreeing necessarily with your characterisation of it, there.
Well, they both were sacked, so I'm assuming you do agree that they did.
But there are two issues here, Patricia, and I think both issues are equally important. There is the issue of being within the rules. Then there is the issue of meeting community expectations. And I think what has changed over the last few years is that what used to be within the rules met community expectations, and they have changed, in my view. And that has reflected in what the Prime Minister has said over the last couple of weeks. So more regular disclosure changes the culture about thinking about, is this a legitimate expenditure of taxpayers' funds? There was a review that was tabled last year, which I've been working on for the last 6 months to bring into legislation, which would have a new series of tests for when you can incur travel expenditure. And the truth is, it's when members of parliament have travelled that tends to have provoked public concern and media interest. So we've been focusing very much on that. We want our members of parliament to travel. This is not Washington, where everyone moves to Washington to live with their families. So we have members of parliament travelling from Cairns, from Darwin, from Broome, from Barcaldine, from, you know, to Canberra every second week with their staff. But
absolutely,
we need to ensure that those costs reflect the scarcity of taxpayers' funds, and that taxpayers are content or happy with the purpose for which they travel when they're not just going to Canberra for Parliament.
So you're prepared to crack down on the family reunion scheme, because that scheme is very contentious. That's where all of a sudden you say, I really need to get myself to Cairns with the family and, you know, I need a special meeting in Cairns, and all of a sudden the entire family can come with you to Cairns. Now, I'd love to take my family to Cairns too, but I have to pay for it.
So that was one of the changes recommended last year, which we are moving on. So family reunion travel, it's mainly to Canberra. Would no longer be business class. It would effectively be calculated on an economy class basis. And we are continuing to look at whether or not there need to be further changes made. I will say, however, that some of my colleagues spend an extraordinary amount of time in Canberra, particularly from far-flung places. They will stay there on the weekend rather than spend a day travelling home and a day travelling back. And I don't think it's entirely unreasonable for them to have their family join them in Canberra if they're there for a 3 or 4 week stretch.
But they shouldn't be able to join them in, you know, lovely locations, the Gold Coast?
Well, yeah. For example, I think on one occasion there was either a presidential or royal visit to one of our capital cities that wasn't Canberra. And I know that if members of parliament who were invited in an official capacity to a reception, if they were to take their spouse or partner who was also invited. You know, that's something I just want to look at. But the point you make about the family holidays, specifically already prohibited, and quite frankly, any MP that did it now would quite rightly be dragged over the coals. But it gets reported, so people know about it.
If you're reforming expenses to restore faith, you know, of the electorate, why not do the same with political donations? Why not make those monthly? Why not lower the disclosure limit?
Okay, so the issue with political donations, I made a specific reference to the Electoral Matters Committee, the most wide-ranging one that I can remember in my 8.5 years in Parliament. We got the issue around authorisation of new technology like robocalls back on in December, and we're looking at legislating regarding that very shortly in the new year. In the first week of March, I and the Parliament should get a report from the committee on foreign donations. The reason I asked for the report is that it is quite a complex issue. Should an Australian citizen based in Los Angeles, who's still on the electoral roll and can vote here by postal vote, should they be able to make a $50 donation to their local candidate? Now, I don't think that's unreasonable. But the proposal that Labor talk about, where they say they're going to ban foreign donations, doesn't ban the company that gets $50,000 transferred to it and then makes a donation to a political party. Labor's foreign donations ban doesn't ban the foreign donations they've received. So I want to look at a system that is watertight and that tackles foreign donations to third parties. And by that, I don't mean the Greens and Nick Xenophon. I mean non-political parties that have a very big presence in our election campaigns. And by world standards, by comparable nation standards, Australia, the UK, New Zealand, Australia has the largest third-party campaigning sector by far, in some cases by a factor of 10.
So given your commitment to do that, you mentioned the first week of March, are we likely to see legislation banning foreign donations, as you've described, this first half of the year?
Well, the Prime Minister's made clear that he wants this acted on soon, and I would hope that we could do it. The budget session's always busy with budget bills, and there's only 3 weeks of the Senate sitting in that budget period from May to June, but I would hope to be able to act on it very quickly.
So the earlier part of this year?
I would hope so.
And just finally, the other issue that you were responsible for was the plebiscite, which was blocked. Obviously, this means that the whole issue of gay marriage is now at a standstill. Do you envisage that this will be revisited this year by your party room? Because I know there are many people on the backbench, and you know that too, who think that it should be determined by a free vote.
Well, the first point you made is the most obvious one. I mean, we would be voting and determining on this issue in 8 days. If the Labor Party had gone through and what Bill Shorten said
didn't,
was okay.
But they didn't, so that's academic now.
I'm not going to let the Labor Party changing their mind and the Greens who asked for a plebiscite and put a bill into Parliament for it, changing their mind, both for opportunistic reasons. That's not going to be what determines coalition policy.
If somebody raises it in the party room, will it have to be reconsidered?
Look, I'm not entirely sure. The Liberal Party room, unlike the Labor Party room, doesn't have a written set of rules, I understand. But the coalition's commitment to holding the plebiscite was fairly strong. And given that Labor and the Greens both said they wanted one at various points, or Bill Shorten did, their opportunism in trying to block it's not going to be what determines our policy.
Can you rule out that there will be a free vote in this term of Parliament on gay marriage?
As a member of the ministry, I'm bound by party policy, but I've said on this program many times before that the Liberal Party does not have a binding caucus. It's what differentiates us from Labor. But in my observation, I think there is very strong support to maintain the party's commitment on the plebiscite.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Patricia.
And that's Senator Scott Ryan. He's the Special Minister of State and the Minister assisting the Prime Minister for Cabinet. You're listening to RN Drive. I'm Patricia Carvelis. Our number, if you want to text on any of those issues, 0418 226 576.